What is up, you guys? Welcome back to the Big Bait Saga's Big Bait Podcast. This is going to be episode number 17. It's been a very long time since I made a podcast, simply because I just lack the motivation to do so. Not because I'm not eager to make this thing grow and become something great that could help people out, but just because I haven't really been fishing as hard as I normally have lately. I've been working a lot, 40 plus hours a week. For some, that might sound like half a job. For others, it might sound like quite a bit. But I've also been doing a couple side things with other things, and it's been eating up all of my time. So I really haven't been fishing. And I've kind of was in a negative mindset for quite a while regarding trophy bass fishing in particular. Not just any bass fishing, but specifically targeting the biggest fish in the lake type fishing. I've kind of been lacking motivation, not to pursue that, but just because I know what it takes to in order to do that. And so it's just been something I've been lacking motivation in doing, simply because I don't have the time. But anyways, I'd like to get into this episode. This episode may end up going all over the place, so I might talk about several different topics. But what I really want to touch on is a couple things regarding the way that the swim bait culture is going currently, and also the way that the things that I believe about color. So just a little bit of a theory about color. So since the beginning of time in conventional fishing, what have we done in order to make our baits catch fish? So just hear me out. Our crankbaits have rattles. Our worms have rattles, or they have lead or tungsten. What does that do? Creates a noise on the bottom. Sometimes they have bright colors. What does the Carolina rig do? Makes a little clacking noise with the bead. What does a buzzbait do? It makes a propelling motion on the surface that disturbs water. What does a prop bait do? Basically disturbs the water with the prop. What does a spinnerbait do? Comes through the water. That flashiness imitates a giant school of shad or whatever. Now that doesn't necessarily look natural, but it ends up allowing the bait to stand out from what's already in the water. So if you look at a spinnerbait swimming through the water, it'll look a lot different than four or five shad swimming through the water. It'll look similar, but what will stand out more to the bass? Obviously the spinnerbait. Way more flash, way more vibration, way more disturbance, a lot more presence, in my opinion. So I bring that up simply to say that since the beginning of time, we have been trying to make our conventional baits stand out from the forage that's in the water. A lot of you guys have heard the term match the hatch. When we say match the hatch in conventional fishing, 9 times out of 10, we're referring to color. We're not referring to the action of the bait. Do you think a bluegill-colored chatterbait represents a bluegill? Potentially, but not really, right? You got the chatterbait blade on the front. You got the skirted, whatever you call it, the skirted harness. You got the big old jig head. You got the trailer, whatever that might be. Now, at the end of the day, that might not necessarily look exactly like a bluegill, but for whatever reason, it stands out from the rest of the bluegill that are in that water, and they decide to eat your bait. Same thing with the buzzbait. What is a buzzbait meant to imitate? Something going across the surface. Could be a frog, could be a fish, could be a bird, could be a whatever. And that propeller, what does that propeller represent? Nothing natural. Just creates a disturbance, creates some flash. So yes, we do match the hatch, but not to the full extent of just making something as natural as it possibly could be. Because if that was the case, we wouldn't have big old hunks of metal on our bait. We wouldn't have skirts made out of silicone on our bait. We would have basically a miniature swim bait would be all the conventional baits if we really embraced the entire term match the hatch. So when we say match the hatch, we're mostly referring to color. Other than that, everything else in conventional-based fishing is done in a way that allows our bait to stand out from the forage that's already in the water. So I hope you guys understood me there. Basically, what I'm saying is conventional baits are designed in a way to stand out rather than to fit in. Yes, they do fit in based on color, size, but they definitely don't fit in as far as having propellers, blades, vibration, noise. They don't fit in that way. So now let's go to swim baits. This is something that's confused me so much for a long time. And it wasn't until somebody, one of my buddies that works at a tackle shop, brought this up to me that it finally clicked in my mind. And I was like, whoa, that is kind of true. So swim baits. When they first started out, what were they? They are primitive paddle tail baits, primitive surface wake baits, double jointed for the most part with a soft tail or a hard tail, made out of wood, made out of plastic. And what were we trying to do with those baits? We were trying to imitate big forage, primarily trout. I know in the East Coast, a lot of guys claim that they were doing that way back in the day before any West Coasters were. But out in the West, we were doing it to imitate trout. Out in the East, it was more of a coincidental thing, I think, more or less. When fishing for muskie, they would here and there catch bass, and they were like, wow, this stuff really does work for bass. But anyways, my point is, back in the day, they're very primitive baits. Not really identical to the forage, more along the lines of the conventional roots, which I was explaining earlier. It imitates it in profile and size, but not necessarily in looks and characteristics. So that was back in the day. Now in the day, we're getting to a point where baits are so realistic that it's almost insane. For example, the Sly Guy lures bluegills, the trouts he makes, the KGB baits. They look almost identical to shad, almost identical to trout. Same thing with the mat lures baits. Identical to whatever forage you're fishing. Not much of a difference in appearance. So, what this means is, or what I've gathered, is that with swim baits, we don't generally take away from conventional fishing that other third element besides size, profile, color. I guess it would be the fourth element. We don't really take away that element of making your bait stand out to everything else that's in the water. So meaning that we don't really have any flash, we don't really have any additional vibration other than the natural motion of the bait coming through the water. We don't really add anything crazy to them. The whole goal in swim bait fishing nowadays, to me, seems like to imitate your forage as exact as possible without deviating from the norm as much as possible. So what I think this has done is it made the whole industry go into a tunnel vision. Everybody wants the realest of the real. Everybody wants the bait that looks the most like the forage that they are trying to represent. We've even developed wraps. They've come a long way since 5-10 years ago. Now our wraps almost look identical. Even some of our bait painters have made baits to look almost identical to the forage they're representing. So while that might not be a bad thing, and it goes along with the term match the hatch, I do think that maybe we need to experiment a bit more, much like the Japanese have. So here's my theory, here's what I've heard, here's what my buddy at the tackle shop has told me that I kind of believe into. Our swim baits look so identical to the prey that's in the water. When they dump in 3,500 pounds of trout, however many pounds of trout they dump in your fishery, do you think it's more beneficial to you to blend in with every single other trout that's in the water? So, your bait might not be in the most ideal position all of the time, anytime. You might have a little bit of an off cast. You might have your bait just a little bit in the bad positioning. Do you think a bass is going to go out of its way to eat your bait that he pretty much assumes is a live fish that's identical to all the prey in the water? Do you think that bass is going to go out of his way to eat your bait if it's not exactly where he wants to eat it and when he wants to eat it? Most likely not. If he knows there's thousands of other trout in the water, he's going to wait for a trout to go exactly where he wants when he wants, and he's going to choose that opportunity instead. So it's more like, it's not a situation where he needs to go out of his way in order to eat. All the food is there. He just has to wait until it goes exactly where he wants it, at the time he wants to eat it, and he's going to choose that. So having a bait that blends in so well with all the forage makes that bass believe that everything is real. Even your bait, he believes is real. So why would he go out of his way to eat your bait when he could choose another prey item that's already in the water, when he might ignore your bait just because it's not in the right place at the right time? So what we can do to combat this, I believe, and what the Japanese have done to combat this, because they have so much bait in the water, is that they paint loud colors. Bright pinks, bright chartreuse, bright yellows, bright oranges, bright blues. They paint all these wild off-the-wall colors, and they move their baits extremely fast to elicit a reactionary response out of these fish. So instead of us trying to imitate the forage identical, they're playing on the bass's natural instinct to eat based on a reactionary movement. Just like a cat, if you had a rat with the cat, playing with the cat, and you had a rat toy and that looked identical to a real rat, they're probably not going to pounce on it if it's just sitting there. But guarantee you, if you twitch that really hard, they're going to go for it right away. Why? It creates a reactionary response. So now, if you had 100 rats in a room, everyone looked identical, everyone was moving at the same pace, your cat would probably not be able to decipher which one to choose. And whichever one he does choose is probably not going to be the one that's attached to your string. Now, if you had a bright pink, bright chartreuse, bright blue, whatever rat, and you twitch that one in the middle of all those other thousands of rats, your cat's more likely to single out that one and attack that one. I know it kind of sounds stupid in that type of metaphor, but I hope you guys get what I'm trying to say here, is that it might not always be a bad idea to pick an off-the-wall color and try something new in your fishery if what you're doing is not really working out for you on a consistent basis. Now, do not get me wrong. These natural-looking baits get bit when you put them where they need to be and when you're there at the right time. But all I'm saying is just to rethink this really hard, open up your mindset to maybe thinking that every bait you buy doesn't need to look exactly like a real trout or a real shad in order for it to work. Maybe experiment more with those bright pinks, bright chartreuses next time instead of just choosing all natural all the time. That's pretty much all I wanted to talk to based on that. Another thing that I wanted to talk to is swim bait modifications, tweaks, stuff like that. So since the beginning of swim baiting, every single person has kind of modded out their own stuff to the way that they like it. So for example, if you're fishing a bait and you wanted it to do something else, you would just mod it out. For example, like Huddleston's. Everybody thinks you need a ROF 5 in order for it to be a slow sink. Well, you could just as easily cut open an ROF 16, cut out some lead in it, and turn it into an ROF 5. Stuff like that is just, I believe, coming more and more like taboo, I guess. I wouldn't say taboo, but it just seems like people are a bit more scared nowadays to mod out their baits and do what they want them to do. And they would rather pay somebody else to do it for them at a ridiculous price. For example, the new trend that's been going around is these PE assist line hooks. I hope everybody knows that to make those hooks, it costs less than $2 per hook to make a hook with PE assist line. You could buy a brand new box of hooks for $5-6. There's an entry cost to all this, of course. Like probably a spool of thread is probably $3. The PE assist line is another $5. But once you have that stuff, you can do quite a bit of hooks with that material. And each hook guaranteed less than a couple dollars a piece, you know. It takes 5 minutes to do it. or less, to be honest with you. And there you have a PE Assist Line treble hook for less than, for maybe $2, $3 extra on top of your $5 for your hooks that you just bought. So for less than $10, you can have a full box of fully tied PE Assist Line hooks. And that's just something I believe that people maybe think is difficult and they just haven't took the time to learn and they'd rather just pay somebody else. But just little things like that I'm noticing are popping off here and there. What else? Like just any custom work, really. People are just kind of scared to do. Like I believe it maybe started out with the whole Butch Brown slide swimmer tuning. I hope everybody does know that they can tune that bait by opening it up, putting in tungsten putty or lead, whatever you want to do, and adjusting, especially on the OGs, you can actually take the pin out of the bait, unscrew or screw in the eye screws, make it a tighter or wider glide. Just little things like that. I feel like more and more people are more scared to do something like that than maybe back in the day. And the pretty much like the OGs of the swim bait world were modding everything no matter what. And that could be due to just the increase in price in all these baits. Maybe, I guess back in the day they weren't as much money, so people weren't as scared to screw them up. But I just would really like to encourage the community to just experiment more with modding out your own stuff, trying it out, and you'll notice that you can save a lot more money than if you would send them to somebody or pay somebody to make something for you. Something as simple as like those PE assist hooks, stuff like that. Anyways, this episode wasn't really meant to be long. I kind of just wanted to get that color theory off my chest and wanted to get that whole word out about modding your stuff out in the public. I know this episode is short, but it's just something to get back into the groove. Thank you guys for bearing with me. If you guys have any ideas on any new episode topics I should do, let me know. I kind of been staying away from a few topics just because some things I just don't think are worth talking about and stirring up a pot real bad. So just let me know how you liked it. If you did like it, make sure to share it with your friends. Let them know about it. Anyways, thank you guys until next time. Later.